Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Thank you for tuning in and being on with us and listening to our program today, rather. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning.
And Fred Jackson, news director for American Family Radio.
Good morning, Fred.
Solemn Monday.
It is.
Sadness all over the country. Certainly, we're experiencing that here this morning.
It is. For those of us who went to the 8:30 service at our churches yesterday, maybe get home around 11 o'clock, and I was looking at my phone, and up pops this breaking news from a little community near San Antonio, Texas, a community, Sutherland Springs. Never heard of it before, but shooting at a church is the first headline. And then as we start to learn more as the day went on, the hours, 26 people dead after a gunman went in there and opened fire at First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs. And we began to cover it on onenewsnow.com. And our reporter, Bill Bumpus, who is on the line with us right now, lives in Houston, drove over there last evening, and was reporting for us this morning. Bill, welcome into Today's Issues.
Good morning.
Yes, Bill. Good to have you. Bill, you're still there in Sutherland Springs. You've talked to a number of people last night and this morning, and it's a community. It's still in shock, I know. Is that what you're finding?
Yeah, that was the exact word I was going to use, was shock, as people just can't believe that in a small little community like this, that's something would happen. As you mentioned, I mean, it's about 30 miles from San Antonio, but I mean, just 30 miles makes a huge difference, because this is a rural area, farmland everywhere, two gas stations, a post office, and two churches. And that's about it. And unfortunately, now we're really just down to one, unfortunately, because so many people lost their lives and were wounded at the First Baptist Church. And I'm here at the other church, River Oaks. And right now, pastors from all over the area are meeting as we speak, and praying and really trying to figure out what to do, how to come together as a community, looking to plan a prayer event probably tomorrow is what I'm hearing, and I'll try to get more information on that.
Bill, this is Ed Battagliano. You mentioned the fact that Sutherland Springs is about 30 miles away from San Antonio, where the gunman, Devin Patrick Kelly, lived. We're reading, of course, some different things. Want to get your take on what we know at this point. Did this gunman just drive 30 miles and find a town? Some of the things we're reading say he had some family members connected to his ex-wife who actually went to this church, or did he pick a town and then a church at random and just drove there?
Well, I think your guess is as good as anyone's right now. I mean, all I know is my understanding was from New Braunfels, which isn't too far away from here. But, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I don't think anyone still knows. And I know just talking to some folks that were talking to authorities is, you know, just even late last night, maybe even early this morning, we just kind of even figured out who all the victims were. I mean, they were just trying to straighten all that as well. So I know we're going to have a news conference later this afternoon, I think, as the Texas Rangers are taking over this investigation. Obviously, FBI, others are working as well. But hopefully we'll find more information then.
Yeah.
It's Bill.
Bill, this is Tim. I appreciate you being on with us. So how far are you from the church now?
Oh, just down the road.
Okay.
And I was over there yesterday, and obviously everything's kind of taped off as far as where the church is concerned. I mean, I was on the parking lot there where the gunman allegedly, parked his car there at that gas station right across from the church. But that's as far as you can get, basically.
Yeah. So this, again, everybody's wanting to know what the motive was for this man. You're saying... We don't know yet. Bill? Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and you know, obviously, we'll still try to get some more information. I've been trying to focus on, you know, what pastors and what some of the chaplains are doing, because we've got folks even as far away as from the Billy Graham Association, North Carolina is here, and Southern Baptist of Texas Convention chaplains and American Red Cross. Yeah. So,
well, Bill, we'll let you get back to work for American Family Radio, and we thank you, brother, for being on, and we'll pray for you guys today there. I know it's a heart-wrenching story to cover, but thank you, Bill.
Okay, thanks.
Let me just make a observation here. And I know I'm speculating. I understand that, but I'm speculating on, like, you know, like what I'm reading here. The headline on Drudge is that this guy preached atheism. I haven't read the whole story. And I know we also encourage people to go to onenewsnow.com for our news from a Christian perspective. But if in fact this killer, as it turns out, Ed, maybe he had no motive connected to. Now, when you talk about what you talked about earlier, you're thinking, well, maybe this guy's so angry at his ex-wife's family for doing him wrong that he's taking revenge on them, and he knows he's got them all in this one. That's what, when you talk about what you talked about, that's what comes to mind. Am I right?
Right.
All of us think that. That's maybe, this is a...
Well, because as Bill, and we just listened to Bill Bumpus, as he said, he is from New Braunfels, but it's a suburb outside San Antonio. So he has to drive about 30 minutes. So why this community?
Yeah. If that's not the reason, then I have to say this is... potentially the greatest hate crime we've seen committed in a while. Maybe he was targeting Christians.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because
People who knew him in high school and after he got out, they said, he frequently said, people who believe in God are stupid.
Right.
He was an atheist.
Well, then maybe it could be people use the expression, I mean, the term hate crime. Maybe he just hated Christians and he had them. Found a place where he could get a lot of them in one place and take them out.
Go ahead. You can put all of this together. First of all, he was drummed out of the Air Force. He was forced out of the Air Force because of beating his wife and child. So a history of violence there. I think he was in the Air Force from 2012 to 2014, something like that. We're also finding out this morning that his neighbors, where he lives, heard multiple gunshots just in the last week or so. And it goes to what the authorities were saying yesterday. If you're hearing or seeing something unusual, wherever you live, let us know about it. It sounds like he was out practicing with his high-powered weapons near his house. And perhaps practicing and getting ready for this event that he participated in yesterday. That's one part of the story. I just want to take you back to the scene yesterday, because what we're finding out this morning is this. He got out of his vehicle at this gas station across the church. He opened fire. He was outside the church, and he started to open fire out there. And then he walks into the church and opens fire on individuals, and then comes back out around to the front doors of the church, and that is where this, what's being called the Good Samaritan, saw him. This Good Samaritan had a gun and opened fire on him there. And then Kelly gets in his vehicle and drives off. And the next part of the scene is that he goes off the road, the police run up to the vehicle, and he is dead. Mm-hmm. So he's not sure if there was a gunshot wound from the Good Samaritan. They also say he had a gunshot wound to his head, maybe a combination of both.
Yeah.
But to go to your point, there is this report this morning about there may have been relatives of his former wife in that church.
Well, that was their church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's what the Wilson County sheriff said, is that his in-laws attended the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs from time to time, but were not in attendance when he attacked.
Right.
By the way, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're live video streaming the show today on Facebook. So if you go to Facebook and type in Today's Issues, you'll see the live video stream of our program. I'm Tim with Ed Walker and Fred Jackson. You're listening again to American Family Radio. Walker, how did this guy get to describe how he was dressed? And go ahead.
Well, he was, I'll describe this and then I have two comments. He was apparently dressed in tactical gear meaning something you would see maybe a SWAT team member or a military guy in. He had a bulletproof vest on, which is very troubling because not only do you have a high-powered rifle, semi-automatic rifle, when you have a bulletproof vest, that even adds another layer of protection for the attacker. So anyways, that means that's how well thought out. He wasn't sitting at home on his couch playing video games and then sporadically decided to go shoot up the church. Wearing that type of gear and using that type of high-powered weapon means there was planning involved. But secondly, I want to add that the common thing that we can all agree on, whether it's Islamic terrorism or whether this guy, whether Islamic terrorism like New York City or this guy who might have had family member
revenge problems of some kind.
Yeah, or maybe he just didn't like Christians. We don't know that yet.
Right.
But evil is the common denominator amongst all of these mass murders. And the second thing is the only way that innocent people can even begin to stop people like this is to be armed. Because, I mean, there's no, and I'm not saying that people being armed will somehow give us a perfect world and we won't have any more mass shootings. This guy's going to carry this out whether someone else has a gun or not, or at least he's going to try. But I'm just saying, as Americans and as Christians, we have to start not being so naive as to think that we can, that this will never happen to us and that we can just kind of let our guard down. We got to do something.
I bet there's a lot of meetings going to be happening at churches this week.
I think you're exactly right. And Pastor Robert Jeffers of First Baptist Dallas talked about this on Fox News last night. He said, you know, people think big churches, and he included his own, they have security measures in place at First Baptist Dallas. But he said this incident shows that even smaller congregations and small communities have got to start thinking about security.
Today's tragedy is every pastor's worst nightmare. And again, I think it proves the reality of what the Bible teaches about evil. But I'm going to tell you, even though evil is going to be defeated, and I don't think we as Christians can live paralyzed by fear, I do think this is going to be a wake-up call. What happened today is going to be a wake-up call to churches of all sizes to do whatever they can to ensure the safety of their members. I think small churches are now going to realize they too need to have a plan. And the good news is every church can do something. Have a volunteer security team. Be observant. Have an evacuation plan. Have some common sense policies like we have of not allowing knapsacks, backpacks in the sanctuary. I think that's the age we live in. And if today tells us anything, it tells us no church, regardless of size, is immune from this kind of attack.
Well, he's right. That's Dr. Robert Jeffers. He's senior pastor of the First Baptist Church, Dallas, and a good friend of ours. I would say, I don't know. I'm just guessing. I'm saying probably 50% of churches already have security plans in place. I doubt this one did, this particular church, small church, country church. Who would have ever thought something like this would ever happen? Mm-hmm. Now you're, anyway, I'd say your bigger churches probably already have security measures.
Yeah. You have to have, in this day and age, unfortunately, you have to have some type of security measure, and it's up to each individual church to decide what's best for them, what suits their needs.
We've had three or four years ago, we had some gentlemen on who that's what they did.
Yes, that's right.
Church security, you remember that?
That's right. We was this after the shooting in Charlotte, the black church. I don't remember what the impetus was where we were talking.
It wasn't Charlotte.
Charleston.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, because that was one of those things where you go, well, and that was somebody who just, you know.
You have metal detectors before you walk into church?
Well,
I mean, that's.
Let me just say this, though. The churchgoers don't need to think that it's – don't need to buy into the narrative that we're being, you know, you're being conspiracy theorists, you're being too uptight, you just need to calm down. When you want to ask your church leaders, your pastor, what security measures do you have? If I'm not going to be armed under your watch in your church, what security measures do you have to protect me and my family? And if you don't, will you lead the charge in getting some measures? Because that's not an unreasonable question to ask your church leaders, your elders, your deacons.
Let me take it from the other perspective too, in terms of being a pastor, because I know there are probably some churches that say we don't allow guns inside the sanctuary, and after something like this, people get critical of that. But do you have only people in church who are trained, who have concealed carry, who are part of the security team, or you let everyone bring a gun and then have a situation where maybe somebody does get paranoid? Who's that guy over there? They right. pull their gun. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
you got to be careful about who is allowed to have a gun
right.
on the campus. But you've got to do something. And Walker, to your point, it's not a lack of faith. It's not any of those things. I'm sure they have something in place for a fire. In the event of a fire, here are the exits. That's why exits now
by
are
law almost, you have to
by
have
law
that.
They're all clearly marked. This is where you go. This is what mm-hmm. we do when there's a fire. Why do you do that? Is that a lack of faith? No, that's wisdom.
Right.
You adapt. You make plans for the circumstances in which you are living. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If it's 100 years ago, you don't have to have any of this stuff.
Right.
But it's not 100 years ago. It is 2017, and these things, while they are rare, and we do want to stress these are very rare. These things can happen, and you should be prepared for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim Wildman with David Tagliano and Walker Wildman and with Fred Jackson. We're paying attention to what's going on. Certainly our heart it goes out to the people there that, wow, little community like that. You know,
pictures of little children.
Well, one whole family was slaughtered. In this.
I mean, eight members of one family.
Yeah, the pastor's daughter, the pastor and his wife were away yesterday. His 14-year-old daughter was one of the victims. The victims range in age from 5 to 72.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures online of the little children. This is from the Daily Mail. I think they just go on Facebook and grab pictures. And two sisters, one little, 5 or 6 years old, one was shot and killed. The other one had her glasses shot off her face, and she survived. This is horrifying.
Yeah.
Mm. Next, what's the next story,
well,
Fred?
We'll move on to another event tomorrow in politics. Now, tomorrow's Election Day, New Jersey gubernatorial race there. The feeling is that the Democrat is likely to win there. But what everybody is talking about is the gubernatorial race in Virginia. And that is where Republican Ed Gillespie and the Democrat, who happens to be the lieutenant governor of the state right now, Ralph Northam, the latest polls show them neck and neck. No one expected this. Democrats have held that for a while. And now what has happened is for the Democrats, they're trying to make this basically a referendum on Donald Trump. That is the modus operandi for them. On the other side, for the Republicans, Ed Gillespie, it is about looking at the economy. Gillespie has also been running ads about illegal immigration, sanctuary cities, all of that kind of thing. So Northern Virginia, as we've made mention before in talking about this race, you have a lot of federal government employees. And so they're tending towards the Democrats there. The rest of the state below that I guess it is Interstate 66 that runs out there is more along the lines of where the Republicans are. Republicans are seeing strength amongst independents, and they're seeing strength amongst those who live in the suburbs. A lot of people are looking at this as an indicator of where things are going to go in 2018, next year's general election across the country. Now, into this mix, and it's bad news for the Democrats, and they're hoping that it's not going to have too much of an impact there, is what Donna Brazile, the acting DNC, the head of the Democratic National Committee, She is releasing a what's called a memoir tomorrow, Tuesday, but she's already given excerpts to the Washington Post and basically talking about the upheaval and divisions within the Democratic Party. She is admitting that at one point during the primaries last year, she wanted to, Hillary Clinton out, and she was for Joe Biden coming in. Now, she is saying her reasoning at that time was Hillary Clinton was in bad health. She fainted at one of her events or something of that nature. But at all points, and Donna Brazile is making no apology about this, she's under attack from other Democrats in the party. She says there's great division within the Democratic Party against those who want to, you know, the old guard to go away, the Nancy Pelosi's, the Chuck Schumer's, and then there's the other party there that basically wants to hold on to the old regime. So you've got all of this coming out just 24 hours before this gubernatorial election tomorrow. If the Democrats hold on, it's a story. If the Republicans win this tomorrow, and the Democrats are well aware of this, if the Republicans are win tomorrow this gubernatorial race in Virginia, it is going to have a huge impact.
It's an earthquake.
On 2018.
Yeah, that's an earthquake.
It is.
You know, I was looking at a story here that Matt Drudge, you mentioned Donna Brazile, the former interim Democratic National Committee chairwoman, but she's written this new book, and it's titled Hacks, the inside story of the break-ins and breakdowns that put Donald Trump in the White House. And as you mentioned, she was against Hillary Clinton. Matt Drudge, who runs the Drudge Report, he tweeted today or over the weekend, I'll fudge it at the end. She writes that she was haunted by the murder of DNC Seth Rich.
Yeah.
Now, that's the one where they said it was a robbery gone bad kind of thing, and feared for her own life, shutting the blinds so snipers could not see her. That's what Drudge says her book says. He must have got an advanced copy. So that is
man,
odd. If you got the former head of the Democratic National Committee saying she feared for her life because she was opposed to Hillary Clinton, and now Seth Rich, the question is why was it a robbery gone bad, or was he murdered because he was investigating the email scandal, wasn't he?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So that is
investigating the email scandal. I think that he was allegedly a part of it, right? I'm talking about Seth. What we're talking about, for those who don't remember, Seth Rich was a young man. Was he in his 30s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who was working for the Democrat National Committee.
Correct.
He was murdered at 4 a.m. in the morning, leaving a house in Washington, D.C., shot in the back, I think.
I thought it was in the back, and okay, but he had his wallet and all that stuff.
He wasn't robbed,
right?
Because his watch was
right.
His very expensive watch was still in his arm, and his wallet was left there.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
all of his belongings remained.
So that's the sign of an assassination, not a robbery. That's what. But the point was, and again, we're getting into some conspiracy.
Well, it's theories.
It's deductive reasoning is
right.
What it
well,
is.
Because of what he was involved with. He was an employee for the DNC.
Who may have been a Bernie Sanders supporter, if you believe that, who was opposed to
Hillary
Clinton.
Emails.
And leaked the emails to, what, Assange? Or
he had access to the DNC emails. He was an IT worker.
Okay.
Yeah,
then if he would have, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There could have been explosive information on the Clintons.
And WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange hinted towards he was the leaker.
Yeah. Now, that sounds like a John Grisham novel and probably would make a good one.
Yeah.
But
And Brazil's admission.
That's not crazy. That's not crazy to consider because of what was at stake here. And Donna Brazile.
She didn't think it was crazy.
Yeah, there you go. We'll be back in 3 minutes more on today's issues. Hello, everyone. This is Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. This is your early announcement about the 2018 tours to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, as well as Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. We call these Spiritual Heritage Tours. There'll be one in June, and one in September. For all the information about these tours, go to our website, www.spiritualheritagetours.com. Very simply, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Have you ever noticed how desperate Jesus was to be alone with the Father? Take the first chapter of Mark. After healing many people in a single evening, it says that very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. What was his time with the Father like? Well, except for the glimpse we get in the Garden of Gethsemane, we don't really know. But we do know it wasn't only in times of calamity that Jesus turned to prayer. It was a constant need he felt deeply. So here's the question for you and me. How might our lives be different if we hungered for time alone with God like Jesus did? Anchor Devotional can help you make time with God a regular habit. Just visit getanchor.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
From director Kevin Sorbo and executive producer Sean Hannity comes Let There Be Light. Saul Harkins is a man who has turned away from God, but a near-fatal car crash gives him one last chance to renew his life, his family, and his faith. Let There Be Light, rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing. More information is available at LetThereBeLightMovie.com.
Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. The First Baptist Church was the gathering place for folks around Sutherland Springs, Texas, population 362, the kind of place where everybody knows everybody. Life revolved around that little white clapboard church house. Folks got baptized there, said their I do's there too. Church supper on Wednesday night, sunrise service on Easter. On Sunday, evil came to Sutherland Springs and tore the heart out of that little town. And in its aftermath, there is great lamentation. There's a song we sing in our Baptist church about overcoming suffering when the sorrow like sea billows roll. Whatever our lot, we've been taught to say, it is well with my soul. And it will be in Sutherland Springs, Texas. It's going to take some time, but one day those who cling to their faith will be able to say, it is well with my soul. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Ed Walker, Fred's gone. He went back to his office for a good reason. We'll tell you in just a minute why. We didn't kick him out. He knew he was going to be.
He knew his time had come.
Would you really want to live to be 121 years old?
No.
I'm sitting here looking at a story. Don Salino, a gentleman by the name of Don Salino, 121 years old in Chile.
In 1896 or something, wasn't it? I think it was, 1896.
1896. Anyway, 121. So that would be before the turn of the century. That guy.
Two turn of the centuries. Now, he didn't remember the first one. He was just 4 years old, but
he probably does. 4 years old, you can remember. But if he, anyway, it's just amazing. I don't know what his health secret is.
What's funny is
maybe it's like eating ice cream once a day or something.
One
like
week
that,
I'll see an article that says, 95-year-old says drinking coffee every day helped her live to 95.
Right.
Then a week later, I'll see an article that says, I never drank coffee, and I'm 100 years old.
I know.
Which one is it? Is coffee good? Is coffee bad?
Yeah, no, you're right. You get contradictory things. So don't base your diet on
One person's experience.
Yeah, probably got good genes there, more than anything else. But anyway, I just saw that. But I was just, when I saw 121, I'm going, not me. I'm not. I don't want to. 121 is.
Unless you're 120. If you're 120, do you want to make it to 121?
Yeah, you do. You know, maybe you change your opinion at 120. But anyway, this fellow lives in Chile.
I guess it would depend on whether he's functional. If he is not having to eat tapioca every day, if he can eat, you know, some spicy food still,
right, and enjoy life,
some dessert and enjoy life, if he can still see, well, down there it would be the soccer game, you know, on his television.
Right.
I guess it might be,
right.
You know. Right. And, of course, still go to church. I want to throw that in there for all of our, you know, people who are going to email me and
spiritual,
say.
Yeah. To say there, so just hedonism.
Yeah.
that makes life worth living. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We did talk for the first 20 minutes or so here about the tragic events that took place yesterday in, what's the name of the community?
Sutherland, Texas.
Sutherland Springs,
yeah.
Right?
That's correct.
Texas, so sad, so tragic. And, of course, the police are there today. They're having a press conference now to discuss
One important fact before we move on to our guest is one of the lead investigators just said that there is video from inside the church.
Oh, my gosh.
Because apparently they film their sermons on Sunday like most churches do.
Oh, my gosh.
Whether the public will ever see that or not,
I
doubt
never watch it. Some people would watch it. I couldn't watch that.
But that is an interesting development.
Yeah, and we don't know the motive yet. Maybe they'll talk about that today. This guy was a former, kicked out of the Air Force. We do know that.
Mm-hmm.
A few years back, and for evidently threatening his wife.
Well, now his kicked out for abusing his wife and child.
So, and anyway, but we don't know. We do know that he had some family members of his ex-wife went to this church occasionally.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But they were not in attendance yesterday.
Right.
Yes.
And the speculation is then he was doing this to get at them. That's just what we're speculating.
That would certainly explain why he drove close to half
to this
an hour.
Particular church.
This little town, which is, you know, as we had Bill Bumpus on for AFR News, he's there in Sutherland Springs.
Right.
And he said, listen, it's, you know, couple of traffic lights, couple of churches. It's a small community. He goes to this particular church. It would certainly explain why he might have made that his target. Although, why you would then kill all these innocent people goes to the evil that was in his heart.
Yeah, absolutely. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Well, some good news happened last week in Washington, D.C., and we're going to talk about that right now. Abraham Hamilton III, host of the Hamilton Quarter each afternoon at 5 to 6 o'clock Central Time and public policy analyst for American Family Association, is with us. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning, Tim.
Rob Chambers, also with us. He's the field director for American Family Association political action arm. Well, we're not a PAC. What are we exactly, Rob?
501c4.
What does that mean, Rob?
That means we can get engaged in political candidates and endorse candidates.
It's a nonprofit that's not tax deductible.
Yeah, so we can educate people on politics and such. But what Rob helps track what's happening in the Capitol with regard to our issues that we care most about. One of them is judges, because President Trump was elected. 83% of the Christian community voted for President Trump. Why did they vote for President Trump? I think, Rob, was the number one reason judges, including the Supreme Court?
Including the Supreme Court. There's with one opening on the Supreme Court bench, that was one of the primary reasons that evangelical Christian voters turned out and voted for Trump, for
so
judges.
It wasn't his historical moral character.
No, sir. That was not it. That was not on the top of the list. I don't think it was anywhere in the middle of the list either. but that was the top of the list.
Yeah.
That was the top of the list is judges, because they know the long-term impact that judges will have on our culture.
Well, we still believe in moral character.
Absolutely.
That the Bible teaches about. And But President Trump and Hillary Clinton were the two candidates that the American public was left with after all the primary season was over. And Mr. Trump, I'm talking about his Playboy pass that everybody knows about.
Right.
I think over the last decade, I would argue over the last decade, I don't know him personally. I've been in a couple of meetings where he was. But I think his view of life has changed somewhat. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say. Talking about President Trump.
Yeah,
he doesn't seem to be running around like he used to. And saying,
I think he would be far more – I think it's proven that he's far more sympathetic toward Christians than Hillary would have ever been.
The point was that people – when left the choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and what they would do with the Supreme Court and the federal bench – that would affect generations of Americans, the Christian community looked at that and goes, yeah, he has moral failures, but so does Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. and their philosophies on judges is about to change our country for a long, long time. So I'm going to vote for president. I'm going to vote for then-candidate Trump because he'll be much better for us on judges.
Yeah, I think he even went so far as even telling us the judges who he was going to, the list that he was going to pull the judges for. May be something that Abe.
So what happened last week, Abe, that's good news I'm talking about?
Yeah, for the first time, I think it's safe to say, in American history, we've had four judges. These are all appellate court judges, but four judges confirmed by the United States Senate in 1 week. Traditionally, it would be, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, here, traditionally, it would be at most one a week if that were to happen. And three of those judges who were confirmed, three of them were on President Trump's shortlist for the Supreme Court. That would be Amy Coney Barrett, who was confirmed to serve on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Then you have Joan Larson, who was confirmed to serve on the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. And then you have Allison Ide, who was appointed, confirmed to serve on the Tenth Circuit, replacing Justice Gorsuch, who was on the Tenth Circuit before being confirmed to serve on the Supreme Court. And then lastly, you have Stefanus Bibas, who was confirmed to serve on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. So this was a monumental move, especially in light of a lot of people, Abraham included, not too happy with Mitch McConnell, what he's doing in the Senate. It seems like when a little bit of pressure was applied to him, he responded not to a core conviction, but to the pressure coming from the people.
Mm-hmm. American Family Radio listeners and AFA supporters were a part of putting a little heat on
Absolutely.
Mitch McConnell and the leadership there in the Republican Party, didn't we, Rob?
Absolutely. Yes, we sent an email action alert out to the AFA supporters, encouraging them to call on Senator McConnell to, quote, get to work or step down. And if he can't get the job done, then he needs to step aside and have someone else that can get the job done. And I think under that pressure with the grassroots supporters of AFA weighing in on this, we see with what Abe just reported here is that we saw Mitch McConnell get to work.
Unprecedented.
Yes.
That four federal judges were confirmed in 1 week.
Ever.
Yes.
And the reason we're doing this interview with you two guys is to pat our listeners on the back and say thank you for engaging.
Absolutely.
And calling and putting pressure on the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, and your individual senators to get some things done up there that they could do. There's some things that the Democrats are blocking. That's a whole different issue we can talk about later legislatively. But they can certainly vote on the judges.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right. That the president has put forward, and they did last week. And the federal judges are so important, folks, because they have a lifetime appointment. And so that congratulations. It's hard for me to say this to Mitch McConnell, and the leadership there in the Republican Party for doing this much. Now they can do a lot more, but we're getting some movement finally on the part, and I think it's the pressure. I don't know if Mitch McConnell did this out of his own free will.
No, I don't believe so.
We're 10 months into President Trump.
So he didn't.
No.
So what do they say? You see the light when you feel the heat? I think that's what happened there. And we weren't the only ones, by the way. There were other groups who were applying pressure to McConnell and company there. And certainly President Trump was. Applying pressure. Remember, he met with Mitch McConnell.
I think you're right. I don't think we can take all the credit for it, but I don't think
99%. I think we can take 99%.
Well, we can take as much as we want.
It doesn't mean to. There's nobody here to take it from us.
That's right.
Well, let me say it differently. I don't think AFA supporters are exclusively responsible for Mitch McConnell responding. But I will say, because we get into details, we won't get into weeds now, but when you see what Mitch McConnell did, we know that it was a response of AFA supporters that were involved in it, because we called for him to make adjustments around these arcane Senate rules to get the job done. And so we saw that happen just last week. And so my hope and prayer is that it will continue so that the Senate will no longer be a place where good bills go to die, like Death Valley.
Hey, Rob, if people want to join our effort here, because a lot of this pressure that we were able to apply to the Senate leadership came due to our online activity, right?
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
People want to subscribe to get to be a part of this. And you need to, folks. Mm-hmm. This is free. We're asking you to be a Christian voting activist, okay? That's your duty as an American citizen to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And if we engage in politics from time to time, government.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because government has authority over us as Christians, Romans 13. So we're supposed to obey the law, true?
Mm-hmm. True.
Christians are supposed to be law-abiding citizens. Unless that law
requires us to sin.
Requires us to sin. That's rare, thank goodness, and we want to keep it that way. So if we want to be good law-abiding citizens, why wouldn't we want good lawmakers?
Absolutely.
And good laws, so that it was easier to obey, right?
Right.
So what can people do if they're listening to us and they say, Tim, I want to be a part of making a difference?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is to go to afa.net, and you can sign up for the action alerts there, afa.net, and they can sign up to receive action alerts. You can also go to afaaction.net and learn about some of the issues that the AFA Action is taking. Is watching and observing and calling on people to take action on. Another thing is, I think what this is indicative of this alert here that our supporters, you that are listening, took action on, is that we're seeing evidence of the grassroots people holding accountable the politicians that they elected. When you see this amount of pressure bringing to bear on politicians on Capitol Hill, then we're seeing that you, grassroots voters, putting pressure, and that's part of being salt and light, is holding these candidates, or excuse me, these politicians accountable. But what we've seen with these judicial nominees that Trump has put forward, that there's been an unprecedented attack by the Democratic left progressives to stop the advancement of Trump's judicial nominees from ever reaching a floor vote. And I was watching some video of the proceeding. It was on Tuesday. Senator Orrin Hatch brought up a really significant statistic. And he basically said from the period of Eisenhower, which was 1953, to the first year of Obama's term in 2009, there were 7 cloture votes on judicial nominees. Basically, what that means is there was only the Senate only had to stop the filibuster 7 times in order to advance a candidate to be voted on. Well, guess what that figure is under Trump? Just in 1 year under President Trump, there's been over 50 cloture votes on President Trump's nominees. What that means is that Democrats have been obstructing the process to try to block President Trump's nominees from ever being voted on. And so Republicans had to invoke cloture, or basically shut down the debate of Democrats 50 times. That's basically a 7-fold increase from the time from Eisenhower to Obama. I mean, that's just
it's resistance, as they call it. It's just obstruction with all caps, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the Democrats get up every morning and they just their number one goal is to obstruct anything the president wants to do, regardless of the merit merits of it, or how they've been treated.
Right.
In the past, what's fair? You know, you want to be treated a certain way, you treat other people. Well, I know that Republicans are just as capable as Democrats of playing politics. Mm-hmm. We know that's true. But to your point, what you just cited was in the past, all presidents have been treated a certain way with respect to their appointments, right?
Right, by and large, yes.
And now that all changed with President Trump. The Democrats initiated a block everything policy.
That's right.
And that's why Mitch McConnell, one of the reasons Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, agreed with us, nothing's going to get done unless you start changing the way things are.
Yeah, putting pressure on Democrats and saying, hey, you're actually going to have to stay and work on Friday and Saturday to get these judicial nominees through for a floor vote. Well, what's interesting is that there's still there's a total of current vacancies in the judiciary of 138, and Trump has nominated 59 so far. Of those 59, 13 have been confirmed.
Does that include the four from last week?
That includes the four from last week, includes Judge Gorsuch.
Still a snail's pace.
Yes, and so there's 14 pending on the Senate floor for a vote.
Are we going to run out of conservatives, though, Abe, to nominate?
Well, I think there are enough of them, and I think that it showed that the president has the votes to get them. It's time to ramp up the pace.
Yeah.
I mean, with the 138 vacancies, we only have the 59 nominees. We need to get nominees to fill all of them, and it makes it even more egregious.
Republican leadership, and I know that I'm not going to be able to pass any good legislation other than one bill a year because of the filibuster rule, I would spend 75% of my time on judicial nominations.
Yeah,
I mean, I would stack the bench. Just stack the bench. Don't spend time debating budgets for 4 weeks that we all know what the outcome's going to be. I know tax reform, they have to spend some time on it, but all the other time I would spend getting these guys on the bench, because this is 10, 20, 30 years down the road, this is what's going to matter. And if we can't get anything done good as far as legislation, then let's do what we can get done.
Yep stack
and,
the bench.
And, you know, again, to reemphasize my point earlier, for most of our listeners who are Christians, they went to the polls and voted for President Trump. 83% of the Christian public in America voted for President Trump. And the main reason they did so is the Supreme Court and judges. Mm-hmm. And so what we're saying is we have to give President Trump so far 5 stars out of 5 for his nominees.
Yes.
Including Neil Gorsuch.
Right.
And the district, the federal appellate court nominees so far. Abe,
yes.
You track this. You track these guys.
Yes.
And ladies, judicial
his nominees have been phenomenal, quite frankly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have to give him 5 stars for that so far. So we'll see how this process goes going forward. But wanted to bring that good news to you that last week, 4 of President Trump's federal judicial appointments went through the Senate and will now be sitting on the bench out there across the USA.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, how many federal appellate court districts are there?
13 total.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Abe and Rob with us, and Fred went back across the street to go back to his newsroom. Ed and Walker, I want to change topics for just a minute. Speaking of the United States Senate, Walker, did you see what happened to Senator Rand Paul?
Yeah, over the weekend, I believe it was on Saturday, Senator Rand Paul was apparently mowing his yard. I don't know whether he was on a push mower or a riding mower. The reason that's, some might say that, why does that matter, Walker? Well, he was apparently assaulted by his neighbor while he was out mowing his yard. I guess he was tackled or hit with something. I don't know if there was a gun or anything involved. Senator Paul is okay. He's
got 5 broken ribs.
He's not in critical condition.
Right,
He's bruised up, has some broken ribs. But the media, they're not really, and I know that the Texas situation is consuming the news cycle, understandably. But this was a liberal, a Democratic, hardcore Democratic voter who his coworkers say he was a socialist, and he assaulted Senator Rand Paul.
Yeah, I would say he assaulted him, came over into his yard, and I'm envisioning him running full steam at Senator Paul and tackling him or something like that to get 5
broken ribs.
Broken ribs.
Including, and I'm reading a CNN report, it says including 3 displaced fractures and lung contusions. So this is a major hit. I mean,
what kind of crime could this guy be charged with?
It's an assault, depending on the severity of the injuries. It could be a felony. Mm-hmm. Normally, instances of this nature would be misdemeanors, but if you have something that risks serious bodily injury, meaning that it could have a protracted effect on him, or it could have potentially caused something more severe, you could have a felony charge.
Is it not also trespassing?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, he comes onto his yard and attacks the senator while he's out mowing his grass.
And it is a senator, too. I'm guessing there's additional charges for assaulting a public official.
Right. I mean, yes. You can make the, I think, obvious assumption that he wasn't just attacked because he happened to be a grass-cutting man.
Right.
You know, if he's being attacked because he's a senator.
The reason this is important is because there is constant vitriol and hate that is preached incessantly.
On the left.
On the left, not just by some loonies, one or two. Almost the entire left, either they talk about how Republicans are killing people, how we're awful, we hate everyone. And
they're the ones who are attacking people, left.
And it's festered. It's not one or two people. The entire news media and all the Democrats, either they preach hate towards Republicans and conservatives, or they foster it by not saying anything or not denouncing it.
Well, I'll give you an example here. The guy who attacked who shot Steve Scalise and the Republicans' congressman at that softball game, Democrat. Liberal follows. Didn't he follow the SPLC? There's an example. You've got this guy. What here went? I'm not saying that people of all stripes can go mentally ill and do crazy things. Okay, I'm just talking about what's these politically motivated actions on the left, while they accuse the right of being full of hate. You see, okay, let's go back to Madonna. The day after the inauguration, Madonna says, I want to either burn down or blow up the White House.
Blow up.
She says that in front of the world, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, blow up. That's an act of violence, she's saying, I want to commit against President Trump. Okay, then you have this...
Kathy Griffin,
comedian, who holds up a head of... Donald Trump, he's been decapitated. Remember that? And, you know, she suffered a little bit, some consequences, but she felt comfortable doing that kind of thing. Then you had this celebrity chef, Anthony
Bourdain.
He's on CNN. He has a show on CNN. Mm-hmm. And he says, I want to poison President Trump. In other words, I want to kill him. I'd like to poison him.
Yeah.
He maintains his show on CNN. You have people like this
Snoop Dogg,
who's a rapper, and granted he's past his prime as far as that goes, but I still saw him on TV on some game show hosting the other day. Well, he's got he talks about wanting to commit.
He's got a new album, I think.
He's talking about committing murder against the President of the United States.
Yeah, he portrays Trump already having been murdered.
Dead.
Yeah. And then nearly the day of the Las Vegas massacre, some news commentators are going, well, it's a bunch of conservatives out there. I mean, what do you expect?
Yeah, no compassion.
Yeah, no compassion there. A bunch of gun-toting conservatives get shot down.
And you had that executive who said that they had no compassion because it was a country music concert. He got fired, one of the top lawyers at that company.
And here you have Senator Paul attacked by a lefty physically on his own property mowing his grass.
And the guy who attacked him, Rene Boucher or Boucher, he's an anesthesiologist. He's a doctor.
Well educated.
Yeah, this is not some disgruntled, unemployed, you know, beer swilling.
Right. This is an educated man and goes on. And it seems to be people on the left that are doing the actual acts of violence against...
Need to mention Charlottesville, though. We talked about that in our story meeting this morning.
The guy who drove the car through the crowd?
Yeah.
Yeah. He hadn't had his trial yet. We don't know the whole story there. We'll be back in a minute with more of today's issues.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.